You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Freeman. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this wonderful show. And on today's show, I will bring to you a Miles Turner season preview. The $18 million per year man, we call him the $72 million man, the block machine himself. I'm going to talk about him, what I would like to see from him this year, what I liked last year, how I see that projects this year, and how he will do in his new role as sort of playing four on offense and five on defense. But first, I want to start by wishing a belated birthday to Jermaine O'Neal, who I am about to make a case for is probably the greatest Pacer in terms of player and talent to be in an Indiana uniform outside ABA. I think I should just start right there. I think Jermaine O'Neal in the modern version of the Pacers, the NBA version of the Pacers, is the best player to be in the uniform. What I mean by that is he became closest of any Pacer player winning an MVP award. He has some of the best 3-4 year runs there. He was arguably the best player on the best team in their history. I didn't do ABA because I can't. There's not a video out there on Mel Daniels and Roger Brown, and those guys are probably the greatest pitchers of all time. I mean, let's be honest. Those are probably the greatest. Reggie, from career length, by far is better than Jermaine O'Neal, but I'm talking about just the run. The peak Jermaine O'Neal was the best Pacer. So let's start with some facts just to establish this all. So Jermaine O'Neal played for the Pacers from 2000 to 2008. So his career with the Pacers is, just by the numbers real quick, he played 514 games starting in 497. Then he averaged 35 minutes per game. Can you imagine a starter nowadays playing that much minutes, averaging 18.6 points per game, 9.6 rebounds. Obviously didn't take a ton of threes, but shot 56% from the field. But considering the time, considering the team he played for is extremely efficient, considering how few points that team he played for actually scored. I mean, you remember, he was part of, I would call it dead ball era in the NBA, or defense first era, where guys were just not scoring at the rates they score now. I mean, shooting percentages were just not that high. You go back to Reggie's during this time. Now, this was at the end of Reggie Miller's career, but he was shooting more like 41%, 44%, 40%. Now he did put up a one season of 40% from three, but only taking like four attempts per game. But basically, Jermaine O'Neal, during this little, I would say that 8-year run, I think was the best Pacer in terms of just pure talent. So we're talking a guy who 03-04 was runner-up in MVP voting behind Kevin Garnett, who deservingly won it that year, although, you know, Jermaine O'Neal was the best player on the best team. But for that Pacer team, not only was he scoring 20 points and 10 rebounds per game, he did that for basically back-to-back years in 02-03 and 03-04, but he was the defensive anchor for this team. He was arguably like kind of the heart and soul. He was the original 15-foot money man in terms of that kind of jump shot. Dave West kind of copied that later on. But he was just by far, I think, the most talented Pacer really ever to play, just because of his pure, talk about height, 6'11 dude, had the skills of a nowadays small forward in a way. I mean, he could put the ball on the ground. He could back guys up. I mean, he a lot of the old school power forward center in some ways, but he was definitely much more efficient with the ball in his hands. He anchored the best team ever in Pacer history. I mean, I think that 03-04 team is the greatest Pacer team ever. I know they didn't make the NBA Finals, but if they had made the Finals, they could have won the championship, versus that 2000 team was fantastic, but wasn't quite, I think, good enough. Like, I don't think they were going to be the Lakers, barring, you know, some crazy injury to Kobe, which could have happened, almost, ironically. But, and then talk about minutes per game, he's playing more minutes than most guys have ever, really, will ever play again in the NBA in terms of per game over a season. He was playing 72, 80, 76, 78 games in this run. I mean, this little four-year stretch from his first 4 years with the Pacers was incredible. I mean, he went up a level that I think, when he was drafted, they thought he could be, or Portland thought he could be. Obviously, he never kind of became that player. In Indiana, he definitely became, I would think, I mean, there's a six-year, I mean, he had the All-Star team for 6 straight years as a Pacer. I mean, he was the best small forward, or power forward, sorry, in the NBA, probably during that run. I guess it depends on what Garnett played. Garnett played power forward or center. If not, he was number 2 power forward. So guys he compares to, right? So that's kind of where you get here, is Reggie Miller, arguably the greatest career modern Pacer. I mean, he played, what, for almost 17 years with the Pacers, and he averaged, you know, finished his career with 18.2 points per game with his ridiculous, like, 47% shooting, almost 47, 40, and 88, 8. So, and Reggie, by far, has, you know, had one of the most distinguished pitchers career, but I don't know if he ever had a run like Reggie. I mean, you could pick a case in the 90s, early 90s, Reggie started putting about 24 points per game one season, 24-3-3. He had a 24-4 season roughly. Another one, he had 21-3-3. So, I mean, Reggie got close, definitely got close, but I just don't think the impact at times was there the same way it was for Jermaine in those kind of 4 years. I know I'm biased. I'm obviously born in 97, and those Pacer teams throughout the 90s were very good and very close to becoming championship teams. I just think the thing was is Reggie was born in the wrong era. If Reggie was 10, first of all, if Reggie played today, he'd be the Bradley Beal of today. I mean, I think that's the best way to put it. Might even be better. He might even be more like the Klay Thompson, borderline Paul George of today. Two, Jermaine O'Neal played in an era where there wasn't a superstar yet. It was between the Jordan and LeBron eras, and Shaq's kind of dominance was starting to fade, and Kobe hadn't yet taken the mantle in the late 2000s. Versus, you know, most of Reggie's career played with Jordan. Jordan came to the league in 83, was the most dominant player probably from like 88 until 98, and Reggie, that was kind of the peak of Reggie's career was all that run. So he got definitely sidelined by that. But defensively, I mean, Jermaine's talent was just beyond that. I mean, you look at defensive ratings some of these years. I mean, there was 1 year with the Pacers where he's probably his best year, and the team had the best defense in basketball, and that's how they were going to win. He had a 93 defensive rating. I mean, that means teams had basically, it's unheard of to see guys under 100 nowadays for the defensive rating. It just is. Reggie during this time, if we take a look real quick, at his defensive rating, I mean, we're talking 03-04, he was 101 on that team, and that he was the worst defender of the five guys in the court between him, Tinsley Artest, and Jeff Foster. Reggie was by far the worst defender, but, I mean, Reggie's the only one who really comes close in terms of just, like, at his peak, was Reggie a better player than Jermaine, and maybe even offensively, Reggie definitely was. I just mean, as a pure package, I think Jermaine was. Obviously, best Pacer career goes to Reggie by far. The other one who, as the other two, you could say, Paul George may be the most talented player ever to be in a Pacer uniform, but I still think J.O.'s got it on him a little bit. I think Paul George, part of his allure was he never reached his potential at the same time as he, you know what I mean? He just never, he felt like he was going, he could have been, that, you know, the Paul George was in Oklahoma City last year was the Paul George he should have been 4 years ago. Now, granted, the injury threw him off, and that definitely set him back. I think he was on pace to be that kind of player. But it felt like he was always kind of short of potential in Indiana. And the leadership that Jermaine O'Neal had over Paul George was just, I mean, miles. I mean, miles away. The last guy who could maybe get there someday is Vic. I mean, Vic had a really great season, 2017-18. I mean, and that's one of the all-time great Pacer seasons for a player. In 2017, just the way that team, in terms of predicting where it was going to be and the leap he made and all that stuff. But I'm not sure you could, as a Pacer player, you could beat the 0-1 to 0-5 run from Jermaine O'Neal. I'm just not sure you can. I mean, if we're talking Pacer teams in this run, let's read some of the numbers. Now, it definitely helped that they had a bunch of other great guys go with them, but you're talking a 42, a 48, a 61, a 44-win team that won 44 games despite half their team being suspended in 04-05. That 61-win team is just, that's the greatest Pacer team of all time, and he was the best player on that team, and he was a huge part of them being there. Obviously, that was a deep team as well. But, yeah, I mean, I just... want to give a shout-out to him. You know, it was his birthday, I believe, on the 13th. So, shout-out to Jermaine, I think, is, you know, he doesn't get enough credit for it. He probably never retires a Pacer. But, man, I mean, he is one of the best to ever suit up in a Pacer uniform. And he's one of the best players to actually, in terms of, like, playing on the court as a Pacer, he's maybe the best we've ever seen in this NBA post-ABA era. All right, that's what I want to do on Jermaine O'Neal. Take a quick break, and on the other side of the break, we will preview Miles Turner's season. Miles Turner himself, also known as Original Turner on Twitter, and apparently his nickname is Samurai Miles due to that headband that he in the ponytail. Ponytail Miles is another one. So Miles Turner, best defensive Pacer by far. He is the anchor of their incredible defense, led the league in blocks last year at 2.7. His offensive ability is promising, but always people wanting more, I think is the right way to put it. Last season, for example, he's averaged 13.3 points, 7.2 rebounds on a 48-39-76 or 73 shooting split. That's impressive. It was a huge improvement the year before. So you look at his last 3 years, his 3-point percentage continued to go up and up and up, and so have his attempts per game. Last year was his best shooting percentage outside of his second season, where he shot 51%, which I don't know how he did that year. That was incredible. I mean, that was the year where you thought, oh, he can make a leap from 14 to 20. I don't think Turner's ever going to be a 20-a-game kind of guy, especially in the new offense. With Sabonis out there, I think Turner will be a little bit sidelined in a way where he'll be playing a lot more in the corner and, you know, maybe getting the occasional putback, you know, dunk or whatever, but he's not going to have the ball in his hands as much, and he's going to kind of be probably even the fourth option when the Vic comes back. Maybe even the worst offensive player on the team on the court at times, which is fine because he is the anchor of the D. And last year, that's where he made his biggest improvement. By far, he became a much better defender last year than I thought he could be. I thought rim protector, traditional center, but last year he broke that mold completely. He was able to guard perimeter players. He was able to, you know, to really function like a roving center almost, where he could come out to the two-point line and block your shot from 15, 20 feet. He blocked that big one in the Bulls game to win the game. I mean, he proved that, you know, I think everybody thought, oh, he needs to make a leap, right? Well, everybody thought the leap come offensively. I think he proved, no, my leap's going to come defensively, because that's where he is. I mean, his yoga and his training, whatever, has definitely gotten to a point where he can hold his balance, keep his feet planted, and because of his height and length, he can, as long as he, you don't have to pump fake on everything, dive for everything, jump on everything, make a block, but he can just disrupt the play by keeping his feet planted. And even if a guy shoots the ball over him, he can, just because of his length and all, can kind of disrupt the shot in a way, force the guy to take a higher arc shot, whatever it is. This year, I think it's just about him improving on that part of his game, right? He just has to go a little bit to the next level even more, because he's going to be playing a lot of four on offense, and I think he might be playing some four on defense at times too. I think the Pacers have to figure out, is he more valuable in the lane or more valuable out on guarding guys? But even if he's in the lane, people are going to switch on him. I mean, I think people are going to take advantage of Sabonis. It's going to be the first thing they do, but Turner's going to have to be the backup defender when Sabonis failed, stuff like that. So it's just about, you know, almost him becoming, you know, I would say right now, if you gave like everybody a value of one on defense, right, so they count as one player, they provide one player value, Turner provides 1.5 players value, right? So he can do what the average guy can just do. He can do 1.5 times that strength. Well, to be the best defender, you have to be able to almost act like you're two guys on the court at one time, right? So I think a good example of this is like Paul George, right? So Paul George, at times, felt like almost he can be put on an island by himself and he can hold his own and doesn't need a help defender and can basically make any plays on the court at all time. And it feels like when you watch him, you feel like there's almost two of him at time on defense, because he is just, he's all over the place at times in terms of just making steals, blocking shots, or, you know, contesting shots. You can put him on an isolation on an island, and he will hold his own completely. Gobert, somebody who kind of does this, where he feels like he's two players at once, where he can pick you up within the 5 feet, but also if you pass the ball out, come back around and block your shot, and you pass around him. I mean, he has that incredible ability. So that's what Turner has to do, is take that kind of level, because then it makes up for his offensive, I would not want to call woes, but offensive, yeah, I guess I'm going to call it woes, where you feel like, you know, he has this very good-looking three-point shot that he should be able to make at, what, a 40% clip, which he's almost there, so frankly he is, but he's got to take like four of those a game, right, instead of the 2.6, because he's taking probably 2 18-footers a game, which he shouldn't be taking. He's got to stop taking those. But he's never going to be, I don't think he's ever going to break the 15-point-per-game model. I think he can get maybe up to like 9 rebounds per game. I mean, if Sabonis on the court, we'll see. I mean, Sabonis might just be a 15-rebound kind of guy, and Turner just gets 8, and it's fine. He's on the perimeter playing offense, but I think he has to be a 4 threes-a-game kind of guy at 40%, which if you do the math on that real quick, that brings you like, I think, 3.6 points per game, and then he's got to, you know, take another 4 or 5 shots, shooting around 50%, let's say 4, that gets him to like 7, 8, 9, 10 points roughly. If he takes 6 more shots, shoots 50%, makes 6 points, another, he's about 10 points per game. And that's where he's going to be, and maybe a couple free throws in there too. That's where he's going to have to be at to just be a competent. I think he has to just make sure teams have to guard him on the three-point line. I think that's the key. If teams are forced to actually pick him up and creates that extra space because they think he can make a three-point shot at an efficient rate, that changes things. And then it's the next step, if he's starting to guard it that way, is getting that pass, kicking it out to somebody like Warren, who might be shooting even better, or Oladipo even better, and so on and so on. But for him, part of it too is staying committed to being in the corner and not coming towards the ball, not trying to make something, you know, on his own. Like I said, at times he might be the fifth option in offense if you have Oladipo, Warren, Sabonis, Brogdon, and then him on the court. I mean, he just might be. I mean, that's, if he's your fifth option offensively, I think you're doing pretty well. I think you're a pretty good team at that point if he's your fifth option. But, you know, Could he make a leap theoretically and all of a sudden become this offensive player you never saw? Maybe. I don't know. I think he's really worked on his defense and focused on that end. I think that's where he thinks his future in the NBA as like a long-term player is. And I kind of agree with him. I'm not sure it's going to be him being a 20-point a game guy. He just doesn't quite have enough of the ball handling skills, enough of the decision, quick decision making to be a 20-point a game guy, kind of like that. So predicting his season right now, if I'm going to guess, I kind of said already, I think he averages about 10.5 points per game, puts up 7 rebounds, and I think gets to about 2.5 blocks. I mean, I could see getting to, he was at 2.7 last year, so maybe he gets to closer to 3, but let's say 2.5 blocks and 1.5 assist. But I think he does shoot more like a 49-40-70 split. I mean, I definitely think he could get closer to 40% from 3. If he shoots 38.8% again, but takes 4 of them per game, he's solid. I mean, that's solid. He doesn't need to be at 40 to be, I mean, 38.8% is where you have to guard him, basically. So, but I think as Pacer fans, as long as we get in the understanding that he's not going to be the 20-point a game guy, but he's going to be the best defender on the court at times and be an efficient offensive player, that should be enough out of him. And that's a guy who you're paying $2 million who definitely probably exceeds that value on the open market. So it's worth it. You know, I think there's all this mix. And then if he can work with Sabonis, that's just gravy on top of that. And all of a sudden, this team has got a ceiling that is maybe an unlimited potential per se. I'd love to hear your guys' thought on Miles Turner and maybe on my JO kind of thing. You can tweet us at Locked On Pacers. You can follow me at FreeManAdam5. You can follow my co-host Tony's at TeastNBA. As always, we're back for 5 days a week. I know it's a little shorter one, guys, but we will be bringing you our Monday shows for an hour each week, and then we'll probably be doing 15 to 25 minutes for the rest of the 3 podcasts. I hope you guys enjoyed this kind of quick one on Turner and a Jermaine O'Neal argument. We will see you guys again tomorrow.